This podcast examines how every experience, every situation, every moment is an opportunity to work with our mind. I'm your host, Caitlin Hatch, creative polymath and dedicated consumer of Dharma talks, Dharma books, self-help books, and just generally the wisdom of others. I believe in the importance of showing gratitude, and the greatest way for me to do that is to share the tools, tips, and teachings of others that I've found immensely beneficial, which is why I started this podcast. My intention is to provide tools, ideas, and contemplations to benefit anyone who wants to listen, because life is workable and totally awesome. So when we learn to meditate, the instruction is to notice the thoughts, label them as thoughts, let them go, and then come back to the breath, or some variation on this. The point is, we don't get rid of our thoughts. We notice them and let them pass through our minds like clouds in the sky. That's a really common analogy on how to work with thoughts during meditation. And when we first receive instruction on how to meditate, it can seem like a pretty simple thing to do, right? I mean, fine, whatever, notice thoughts, label them as thoughts, and then come back to the breath. Easy. Or not. Not even a little bit for most people. I know that there are people who find this easy, but I definitely wasn't one of them. Because the thing about our thoughts is that they can be really sticky. Some of them are downright enjoyable, in fact. Like, I mean, we have sexual fantasies about that person that we're really into, or we might have an employment fantasy about finally sticking it to our boss and then going and getting our dream job, or we'll have a financial kind of fantasy, like, well, what if I had £1 million, right? And they're all hugely entertaining. And then we also have habitual negative patterns of thought. Thoughts of self-doubt and worry and apprehension that come up around social situations or to do with work or with the relationships that we have, like friends and family and lovers and so on. So all of this is what I'm referring to when I say storylines. These, not just the initial thought, but all of the extra ones, the narrative that our brain churns out, a narrative that actually causes us a lot of suffering, because despite the fact that thoughts are like clouds in that they are fleeting and temporary, we tend to think of them as real. We experience our thoughts and the narrative that they spin off into as something real, something tangible. And I would say for the first 2 years at least after I learned to meditate, I didn't get that quite. I would listen to the guides and teachings around how meditation was done, but I was largely using it just as a way to relax, to chill out, and then maybe kind of had the sense that if I did it long enough, I could get rid of my neurosis or something like that. I knew that when I did meditate, things would feel better, and I'd feel calmer and more able to manage what was coming up in my life, but then I'd only meditate long enough just to get that kind of nice result. I was unwilling to go deeper. Like, I was totally unwilling to sit when I felt really agitated, or if I had a lot of anxiety going on, or if something was genuinely up for me. And this approach is quite common. I know that now, and I kind of knew it then, actually. It's the experience of a lot of first-time meditators, especially because there's all these misconceptions and misunderstandings about what meditation is and how it works. We get the wrong end of the stick and think of it as a practice that will allow us to, like, transcend all uncomfortable experiences so that we can be in some sort of blissful mind-body connection where we're really calm and reasonable and all the messy stuff just kind of, like, disappears, it's gone, woo! It's really uncomfortable to be told that, actually, meditation is a practice we use to train in being present. And that being present means showing up for the difficult or painful things in our lives just as much as it's about showing up for the really joyful, fun stuff. Initially, letting the thoughts go sounds quite awesome, really. It's like, great, brilliant. Like, meditation will help us to, quote, get rid of them, end quote. Send them off somewhere outside our head where we don't have to be pestered by them anymore. Pesky, pesky thoughts. Go away. Except that's not actually what letting the thoughts go means. We can't transcend our mind. This is not the purpose of meditation, nor what is meant by letting the thoughts go. Letting the thoughts go means actively dropping the storyline. We can't get rid of our thoughts. Thoughts just happen. You'll notice that. I mean, like, anybody who has ever meditated for any length of time will have noticed that. Our brain just conjures up thoughts. What we can let go of is our attachment to them. Letting the thoughts go is a process of transforming the mind, transforming our approach to life, to our experience, to everything, through noticing, paying attention, examining, and questioning. Meditation is a technique we use to familiarize ourselves with what is actually going on, not what we think is going on, not what we perceive is going on, not what we would like to have going on. Meditation teaches us how to remain present with what is, no matter what. Now, human beings don't enjoy being present. In the West, the logic of the left brain is valued over the intuition of the right, so the language center is given a lot of focus and develops hugely. And therefore, we spend a lot of time in our heads thinking. Our experience becomes about our thoughts, not about what's actually happening around us. I'm going to give you an example here. Take a situation totally free of emotion, right? Description is two people standing in line waiting to pay for their lunches. Now you go into the head of one of those people and add all of their thoughts and emotion to that situation. And it becomes, I was standing in line behind this dodgy looking guy with a beard while I waited to buy my favorite sandwich so that I could have lunch out in the park and enjoy the sun while it lasted this afternoon. So our experience is that the guy is dodgy looking, the sandwich is her favorite, and the sun is enjoyable. But for another person in the same situation, in the same experience, the guy might look like Santa Claus. That particular sandwich is absolutely revolting and they never buy it. And because they have sensitive eyes, the sun gives them headaches. So they didn't think going sitting in the sun would be really nice. All of these things are actually neutral. The guy is just a guy, the sandwich is just a sandwich, the sun is just the sun, until we impute it with all of our meaning. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with this, of course. It's a natural way to function in the world, and sometimes it can actually be of benefit. You know, you've got like gut instinct from your experience, so you might have a bit of a storyline, but it's from something that you've learned and you could apply it and it could help you later in some way. So like, for example, you know that you like that sandwich. You remember that, you've got your whole experience around it, that kind of thing. The problem arises when we close down around our storylines and we can't see the fullness of a situation outside of the story that's running in our head. We limit ourselves by seeing our experience as real. Dropping the storyline is asking us to step away from the narrative in our head and actually be present with what's there, free of our opinions. And it's difficult because we don't realize how much we identify with what we think. So to illustrate this with a personal story, I was diagnosed with panic disorder when I was 17, and I sort of muddled along with it until I was hospitalized at 23 due to total mental collapse. In the weeks following the hospital visit, I started to see my psychologist, who very skillfully invited me to examine my thoughts and my storylines. I learned a lot from these initial sessions that I had. So one, I am not my anxiety. Two, suffering doesn't make me special. And three, my past doesn't have to determine my future. So I used to say things like my anxiety or I'm anxious, and sometimes I still do. But these days I'm very aware of it. I consciously change my language. So I say my experience of anxiety or when I was going through a lot of anxiety to remind myself that anxiety is something we all experience. It's not who a person is. I am not anxiety. And a big part of my storyline was also that I was so deep and interesting because of my suffering. I felt like I was really special because I'd been bullied as a kid and gone through depression and had this anxiety disorder that was so difficult and blah, 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 blah. The competition for who has suffered the most is never going to be won. And if it was, it certainly would not be won by someone who's living in the West. And also, who would want to win that anyway? So, the last one, my past doesn't have to determine my future. That was big for me. I had patterns of depression and anxiety, and because they'd always been there, I assumed that they always would be. It hadn't occurred to me that this was a storyline I had a choice to drop. And of course, telling someone who is mentally ill that they choose how they feel doesn't go over well. Also, because usually when people say that, it's said in such a way that implies we can just decide to be happy instantaneously in the moment. I spent years building up these storylines. It has taken me years to dismantle them, to transform my way of thinking and my approach to life. And it wasn't my fault that I built up these storylines. This wasn't about blaming myself for my lot. It was about understanding how I had created patterns in an attempt to feel better, which actually ended up making me feel worse. My pattern was to run away from feeling bad. I ignored how I was feeling, and my storylines were all about how things outside of myself had to change in order for me to feel better. Like, if I had a better job, if I could just make my partner happy, if my friends just got along, etc., etc., etc. But what I was doing was giving my power away and building up storylines into this frothy mess of reality out to get me. But it wasn't reality. Even if I had a better job, and I somehow could make my partner happy, which wasn't my responsibility, it's no one's responsibility to make anyone else happy, even if my friends did all get along and so on and so forth, I would still have the same patterns of thought that got me into that tangled mess that I was in. I addressed this in the episode I did, which is titled, What is Genuine Happiness? A happy person will be happy regardless of their external circumstances. That's not to say that someone who is happy doesn't feel fear or sadness or anger. It's to say that they own their emotions. They acknowledge them as part of their experience. I'm human. To be human is to experience a lot of different emotions. But emotions, just like our thoughts, pass. They really only stick around when we big up the storylines. Elizabeth Mattis Namgal likes to say that we each have our own little universe. The practice of meditation, of dropping the storyline, is a practice of stepping outside the boundaries of that universe and seeing things in a much bigger and fuller way. She uses the story of Gautama and the mustard seed to illustrate this. This story is it's a classic Buddhist sutra. I love this story. Gautama's infant child has died, and she takes it to the Buddha and asks for him to bring the child back to life. Buddha says that he will, but he says in order to be able to do it, he needs to have a mustard seed, and it needs to come from a household that has never experienced loss or death. So she sets out going to all of the houses in the village and very quickly realizes that there is no household that hasn't experienced loss and death. As Elizabeth describes it, Gautama's experience goes from I am suffering to there is suffering. When I first began working with the anxiety that I was experiencing, I felt like I was the only one who knew how awful it could be. I knew other people experienced anxiety, but it didn't look like it was so crippling for them, so I didn't think that they would or could get it. As my storylines began to drop away, as I came to identify less with the emotion as part of who I was and see it as a chemical reaction to triggers based on a historical pattern, more and more people started to tell me about their experiences with anxiety. experiences that were just as severe and painful and difficult. They opened up quite a lot, and suddenly I could see that I had never been alone with how I was feeling. There were so many people going through the same thing, but because I had been stuck on having my unique storyline, I couldn't see that underneath there was shared experience. It's really liberating to be able to drop our storyline and see everything in a much bigger way. The more we can tap into our experience of being human, the bigger our world becomes. The more compassionate we become. And life stops being something out to get us and starts being something that we get to engage in and totally enjoy. Thank you so much for listening to Everything is Workable. My content will always be free, but if you'd like to help make it even better, you can become a patron by clicking the green button at the top of the page. I'm always looking for content suggestions and people to interview. If you've got any ideas or would like to contribute, you can get in touch through my website, www.faunawolfcreations.com. That's faunawolfcreations.com. Thank you to the very talented Dexter Britton for sharing his music with the world. The music used in this podcast is from his Creative Commons Volume 5 album, available on www.dexterbritton.co.uk.